Brilliant novels, groundbreaking nonfiction, evocative poetry, great books, and insightful conversations whenever you want them on the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast. Pick the books that speak to you or read them all. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Loss is an important part of life. Every year in Iowa, just about 30,000 people die. The past year has been a time of extraordinary loss, with so many Iowans succumbing to COVID-19. In 2020, we lost more than 35,000 Iowans, and we know that more than 5,100 Iowans have died of COVID-19 so far. Every person represented by those numbers left behind people who loved them. They were mothers, fathers, grandparents, sisters, brothers, sons, daughters, and friends. When you lose a member of your family, it's not only a time of grief, it also often requires a huge amount of legal and financial paperwork. And grieving is not something that takes a few weeks or months. It's a journey that we travel for a long time. This hour, we explore what it's like to lose a loved one and talk about the resources you may need to get through it. My first guest today is Kimmy Shalady of Norwalk. Her husband, Mike, died suddenly of a brain aneurysm last February at the age of 43. Together, they had two children, now 15 and 13. Fortunately, they were able to hold a gathering and say their goodbyes before COVID hit, but it has been a long and difficult year. Kimmy is on the line with me now. Kimmy, thank you so much for being willing to share your story.
Thanks for inviting me, Charity.
And I'm so sorry for your loss. Oh, just a terrible and sudden loss at the age of 43. This was not something you were expecting. This was not something you had ever imagined going through.
No, and there were no symptoms or no signs. It really took us all by surprise.
There was a gift that you had in knowing how to say goodbye to your husband, Mike. You had lost a friend in recent history. And when that friend died, their spouse said, please, please tell your loved ones what you want should you die. And that's something that you and Mike did for each other?
It was begrudgingly. And of course, his first suggestion was a Viking funeral pyre, which is not possible and illegal. But he did write down some things. And it was so nice not to have to guess. He wanted to be buried with his tuxedo on top and his Hawkeye kilt on the bottom. And he wanted a large gathering of family and friends and kind of like a tailgate. And that's what we did.
That's lovely. So tell me, I think that already gives us a little bit of insight into who Mike was. But tell me more. Who was Mike?
Mike was the kind of person where you knew when he entered a room. He was a large presence. He was very joyful. He was a good friend to many. And so, as you mentioned, we were able to have the funeral and gathering. And so many people showed up, from coworkers to college friends he hadn't seen in 20 years. He made an impact on people, and his memory, their memories of him, were always of fun. He was just joyful.
I've been looking through some old photographs, and I've also been reading what you've written on your blog in the past year, and I am struck every time I see a photo. Mike was a man with a very distinct sense of style, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. From high school on, he always had magnificent hair. And as he got older, that grew into a beard and a mustache. He had more product than I did. And he always enjoyed dressing up, whether it was a costume or dressing up for a festivity. But he enjoyed looking a certain distinguished way, and his mustache is evidence of that.
When Mike died, at first, there's just so much to do. And you mentioned knowing how he wanted you to say goodbye and throwing together a tailgate to send him off, which was filled with joy and laughter and music and love. After that rush of activity, though, it was just you and the kids. What was that like?
I think our experience was exacerbated by the pandemic. It was very isolating. And, you know, all the books that I read about grief or parenting grieving children talked about how important it was to stay social and active and get out. And we weren't able to do that. And I mean, luckily, I have a family member who was great about helping me with what I called the business of death, because it is so overwhelming, the amount of work that needs to be done afterwards. And grief causes such a fog mentally. It's so hard to just do the normal things, much less any of the other paperwork and things that have to be accomplished.
And of course, your kids are hurting and grieving at the same time. And you're their mom. You're the person that they have to turn to. So as the world shut down, it really was just the three of you. The rest of that safety net seemed very far away.
Absolutely right. We were lucky that I had allowed them a couple social media apps with family members so we could interact and see their faces. But it was really hard. I think grief hits so unexpectedly. And when it does, they're so young and growing, and their bodies and minds are rapidly changing. And there were days when I was struggling and had to rally because they would get triggered and they needed me to just be there for them in their grief.
You and the kids, it sounds like, have been very open with each other about what you're feeling and very open to sharing memories of Mike and bringing him up. I mean, he's a part of your daily life, even though he's gone. But there were other people who loved him very much who were not comfortable grieving openly that way. Was that challenging? Is that challenging for you?
It is. You know, I've always kind of worn my heart on my sleeve. I'm a terrible liar, so my face shows exactly what I'm feeling. And it's hard, I think, for people who love you and care about you to watch you be in so much pain. And some are comfortable to sit and hold your hand through it, and others aren't. And then we all grieve differently. There was a friend, a close friend of Mike's, that was very angry in his grief. And there were others that would just break down in tears at work. You know, and it's hard because the varied ways people grieve don't always match up. But he is. I mean, we bring him up every day. We tell stories, the inside jokes, the silly things he used to say. He is and will always be an active part of our lives. There is no passive. There is no past. He is still here with us every day.
Did you make a choice to grieve in this way and to lead your children through grief in this way, or was this instinctive to you?
I think it was instinctive to me because I'm not very good at hiding my emotions. And so it was important to me that if the kids were angry at Mike for dying, that I said, you have every right to be angry. This is unfair. Or if they were sad, or if they were just moody and couldn't figure out why, you know, we embraced where we were and just tried to acknowledge what we were feeling, sometimes where it stemmed from. And if we didn't know, we'd just say, there's no normal way to grieve. There's no right way. And we're just doing the best we can.
While you were helping them with those emotions, you were also experiencing those emotions yourself. There is nothing you could have done to save Mike, but you kept second guessing yourself, and you were angry too. So how did you manage your emotions at the same time?
That's such a delicate balance. I think, you know, we each have our therapist that we speak to, which I think is crucial. And for me, there was a lot of guilt in thinking I should have noticed something. I should have, you know, done more, eaten healthier. I mean, the guilt factors that of all the should haves and the could haves. But I can't let myself go into a hole of sadness or anger because I can't leave them in their grief alone. And so when things have been really hard, I guess I just remind myself I'm not the only one hurting.
Kimmy, we're going to pause here for just a moment, but we will continue this conversation. I'm talking with Kimmy Shellady of Norwalk. Her husband, Mike, died suddenly of a brain aneurysm last February, and she's sharing her journey through the past year as a mom and a grieving partner. Throughout the hour, we're going to talk about what it's like to lose a loved one, not just this journey of grief, but also the responsibilities that come with it, the legal and financial responsibilities, and the resources you may need to get through a time like this. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
In a time like none of us have experienced before, there's strength to be found in community institutions like Iowa Public Radio. I'm Executive Director Myrna Johnson, and I'm so proud of the thoughtful, informed coverage IPR brings you on the issues that matter. Listener funding is the power source that makes it all possible. Facts, understanding, insight, that's what you fund when you give to this station. Make your gift now at iowapublicradio.org, and thank you.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about what it's like to lose a loved one, something that so many families deal with every year. And of course, during this pandemic, more and more people are dealing with loss. With me right now is Kimmy Shellady of Norwalk. Her husband, Mike, died suddenly of a brain aneurysm last February at the age of 43. And during the last year, she's been blogging about her experiences in a private way, something for herself, something for her kids, something for those who knew and loved Mike as well. And she's sharing her story with us today. And Kimmy, before the break, we were talking about trying to manage your emotions, being there to support your children. You have been writing about your experiences throughout the past year. And like I said, this is not necessarily for public consumption. What has been important to you in that writing process? How has that helped you?
I think initially I was worried the kids would forget. You know, middle school is so traumatic. And then you add a pandemic and their dad dying, and memories get foggy. And so it was a way of recording our experience, what happened, how many wonderful people have reached out. I mean, just from people who knew Mike, my Facebook friend count went up by 250 people because they want to check in on us and they want to know how we're doing. And so eventually I opened the blog up with a password simply so people could know how we're doing. And I guess I didn't want to just say we're okay, we're fine, because we weren't. And not everybody loves the fact that I'm sharing so much. But like I said earlier, it's who I am. It's helping me grieve and process my anger or my sadness or my loneliness, or how difficult it is to suddenly be a single parent. I mean, I had no idea how hard it would be to be the only one, you know, and definitely wasn't part of the plan.
One of the things that I have found really beautiful in your remembrances is how honest and real you are. I think some of us, when we lose a loved one, feel like we can only remember the very best things about that person. And in some ways, that person becomes less real over time if we don't talk about who they really were. Has that been important to you, to be honest and open? Marriages are not perfect. No marriages are perfect. But to remember Mike as he really was, not as this idealized version of him.
I had a friend who was given a bookmark when her mother went into hospice. On that bookmark, it specifically guided you to not put your loved one, your lost loved one, on a pillar, you know, to raise them up as a perfect human being. You know, part of the love that Mike and I shared for 20 years was the fact that we were so imperfect. And sometimes that made for really hilarious stories later. But I guess it's important for me, as I write or as I talk to the kids, that they remember everything about what a wonderful, well-rounded, and still flawed person that he was and that we all are. And that's part of what makes our human experience worth living, right? Is everything from the good, the bad, the ugly, or the broken. I don't want them to pretend to be anything other than they are. And so that's how we're remembering Michael.
You also write very openly about the ways that grief comes back. As I mentioned earlier, this is not something that takes a couple of weeks or even a few months. This is a nonstop journey that you travel through, and it will always be with you to some degree. You wrote last September about just how, you know, 9 months, 8 months after Mike's death, everything felt like it was just crashing down around you. Can you tell me a little bit about that time and just how out of left field it came?
Yeah, it was... I think one of the surprising things about grief is how physical it is. My body knew something was wrong before my head knew what was going on. And there was a 3-week period that I got 3 COVID tests because I couldn't figure out why my body physically hurt. Why all of a sudden I was out of breath, why my head was constantly pounding. And, you know, I went to the doctor and we checked meds and, but it comes unexpectedly and it kind of sucker punches you. And like I said, it's so much more physical. And then there's that fog in your brain. They call it widow brain, right? Kind of like, what do they call it? Mother's brain.
Mommy
after
brain.
You have
yeah.
an infant. Mommy brain. Yeah, it's just you move like you're underwater. You think like you're underwater. Your speech is slower. And then I was lucky enough to be a part of a couple groups online, and I find out this is completely normal. And it does hit me physically, it seems, before I consciously realize that, oh, I'm hurting, I'm sad, or I'm angry.
You also came to the realization that you were coping with post-traumatic stress syndrome as well, because of that shock and that horror of finding Mike. So that's been a part of dealing with grief as well. And I'll talk later with a therapist about some of the ways to help someone with that. But was that also a shock to you, that this is one more thing that I'm living with?
It was, and I couldn't understand the panic or the rage, or when my son would be triggered by things he used to love, like music. Mike brought music into our house daily. We met being musical people in college, and all of a sudden, certain songs or participating in these things that he used to love brought him right back to me doing compressions, trying to resuscitate Mike. Obviously, he had been gone for a while when we discovered him, but I mean, finding someone who has passed and flashing lights in the windows when it's dark out, songs. I mean, all these things have been a painful and shocking trigger that it took us a while to realize it was a post-traumatic stress reaction. And we're each working through that individually. It's going to be a while, I think.
Yeah. We're going to wrap up here, but I know that everybody experiences grief in their own way, and the fewer people who have to go through this ordeal, the better. But do you have advice for people about how to be prepared and how to deal with something if it does happen to them?
You know, our initial conversation about make your person write it down so you don't have to guess at one of the hardest points in your life. And it also reduces any differences of opinion there may be between you and his family or his friends about how he or she should be remembered. And I guess the other thing is just understand that everybody's going to grieve differently. There is no right way. There is no timeline. And that's the way it should be, to allow yourself to grieve as healthily as possible. That's been my experience anyway.
It feels like you've done so many things right. How are you and the kids? How are you doing?
Well, we are 2 days away from the anniversary of his passing. And the last couple of weeks have been particularly brutal. I've had to pick the kids up from school because they just can't function anymore. But they are still participating in things, different things sometimes than what they were doing a year ago. And we have an amazing support system here. And obviously his family in town has been so supportive. I'm just not sure we could have done it alone.
Kimmy, all the best to you and the kids. Our hearts are with you during this difficult time, but thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you for listening.
Kimmy Shellady of Norwalk, her husband Mike, died suddenly of a brain aneurysm last February at the age of 43. In this hour, we're talking about what it's like to lose a loved one. And anytime you lose a loved one, there's a lot of paperwork and bureaucracy to deal with. That is particularly difficult when the death is unexpected and when your loved one was in the prime of life. Natalie Linner is a professor of law at Drake University, and she's here to help us walk through that mountain of paperwork and legal obligations that follows a death. Natalie, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And of course, as Kimmy was just sharing with us, it's so important to have open conversations with people you love and to understand what they would want in a case of an emergency or death. But what is some basic advice? So let's start with the will, which is something a lot of people just don't have, right?
Yes, only about half of Americans die with a will at this time. And so it is something that people don't want to deal with. The time, the cost, they don't think they need it. We're all convinced of our immortality. And it's such an unpleasant task, really, to sit down and think about your death and what you want to have happen at that time. And so a lot of people don't go to that trouble. But as you know, we've seen today, and as we think about all those who've lost and are grieving a loved one, having a will really can minimize family strife, stress, and uncertainty at such a difficult, vulnerable, and overwhelming time.
One of the reasons that a lot of people don't have a will is because they think they don't own enough to have a will. So let's talk about what's in a basic will. Even if you are not a person with a lot of material belongings or money, what is in a basic will that is so necessary and helpful at the time of death?
Absolutely. You know, it's such an important thing. I'm so glad you brought that up, Charity. Estate planning is not just for the rich. It's for everyone to settle their affairs and really decide who gets what, control what persons or organizations you want your property to go to. And it's especially important for parents of young children to name a guardian and to be able to provide that financial security for those children, deciding who you want to raise your kids if the unthinkable happens. And so everyone should really consider thinking about where they want their property to go and who they would want to raise their children if they have young children at home. A will is a written document that will transfer your property to who you choose. It will help pay your debts and claims that might have accrued during your life. And it will ensure that the taxes are paid before your assets are distributed to your friends and family.
With that will, once you have it prepared, and even if it's a fairly simple boilerplate document, where do you keep it? How do you know that it's available to the people who are going to need it?
Good. It's another important part of estate planning. I'm glad you asked that. To put your will in a place where people who are close to you know where it will be. Some people choose to put it in a safe deposit box. Some people choose to keep it with other important documents like birth certificates and passports. So it needs to be in a place where your loved ones would look that and tell the people that you trust that the will is in the top drawer of the desk in the office or in the top cabinet in your closet, or you kept it with your lawyer or you kept it at the bank. So you choose a safe place, but the important part is to make sure your loved ones, your spouse, your children, your parents know where you've kept it.
Is this something you can do yourself? Could you draw up your own will?
Absolutely. What you need for a will is it needs to be in writing. It needs to be signed by the person making the will, yourself. And it needs to be witnessed by two competent people. In Iowa, that means you have to be over age 16. And it's usually people, and it should be people, who aren't part of the will, who are not receiving anything under the will. That makes them disinterested. And if you meet those requirements of a writing signed by you with two people who can testify that this is what you have wanted to have happen when you die, it will be valid. You don't need a lawyer to do that.
Anybody who's ever gone through getting married and gone through a name change knows that there's a whole lot of paperwork that goes along with that, and you have to have your marriage certificate for all kinds of things. It's similar with a death certificate as well. Tell me why that document is important and how many you need.
You need to obtain a death certificate when a loved one passed. Usually about 10 will do the trick. Usually that's going to be handled by the staff at the hospital or the nursing home. If you're under hospice care, hospice is wonderful in taking and making sure you receive that certificate. If not, hopefully you will have called 911 and gotten some kind of medical declaration of that death certificate. That death certificate will help you settle the estate. Depending first with probate, if you have a will, you will submit the death certificate with the will to open up the court proceeding. But even just going to the bank, closing an account, if you have a joint account, the bank will want to see the death certificate before they transfer the assets to you. The life insurance company will want the death certificate, the brokerage accounts, the government agencies that you may be involved with, Social Security. So the death certificate is your key that unlocks the benefits and the money that is tied up in the what the bank thinks is a living person's name. So it is important to have that death certificate, like your marriage certificate, in changing your name. It's a similar function. It's important to have those on hand to give to those financial institutions and government agencies that request it.
We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Natalie Linner is with me, a professor of law at Drake University. We're talking about the paperwork and legal obligations that follow losing a loved one. This is Talk of Iowa.
Iowa Republican leaders encourage wearing a mask at the Capitol, but oppose making it a mandate.
We have no way to enforce that, even if we were to say everyone in the caucus has to have a mask.
This worries Democratic leaders.
I'm concerned and want to avoid, you know, turning the legislature into a super spreader event.
Legislative leaders share their goals and concerns, and so does the governor on the podcast Under the Golden Dome. Listen to the new episode now at iowapublicradio.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about what it's like to lose a loved one. And of course, along with the grief and loss, there are also a lot of bureaucratic things that you have to take care of, a lot of paperwork, a lot of red tape. And with us right now to help us understand some of those needs and what we can do to prepare for them, Natalie Linner, professor of law at Drake University. And Natalie, just before the break, we were talking about the importance of having a will, making sure people know where it is, the importance of having death certificates, probably about 10 of them to take care of all of these things. But you also brought up bank accounts, and a bank account is the kind of thing that people have had for a very long time. But now we have these huge digital footprints where we have accounts everywhere and all kinds of passwords and things like that. Is that something that we should write down for a loved one so that they can access all of our information?
Well, it's a hard situation because you certainly don't want to write down information that will allow fraud or people to hack those accounts. But being concerned about your digital assets and your digital property is something that I've been very interested in. I've written several articles on because it is something that is so pressing and difficult to handle in this digital world once a loved one passes. And so the first thing that you should do is really make a list of accounts and online reward programs, social media accounts, email accounts that you have. And if you're not comfortable putting your password down as well, at least give the information of what kind of digital accounts you have and what you want to have happen to them. Sometimes you can do that directly with the bank or the social media account itself. Facebook allows you to decide what you would want to have happen to your account when you die, and Google does the same with something called an inactive account manager. So these are embedded in the programs to go in and decide what you want to have happen to those digital assets when you pass. And it's definitely something that you can do while you are alive, making those lists in order to help your family and loved ones prepare for the tragedy if you were to pass.
What are some of the other things that tend to sideline or sideswipe people and surprise them? One of the things that springs to my mind would be the title to a vehicle. If that is in your spouse's name, that can be a real hassle, right?
Absolutely. You'll have to go to the DMV thankfully, Iowa provides a simple procedure for you to change title of a car with the death certificate. So that's another reason why one of those 10 death certificates that you have can help transfer title of a car. But if the title of the house is in your spouse or child or parent, you will have to open a probate proceeding in order to transfer the title of the house and make that title in the name of the survivor. And so that is the function of the probate court in order to transfer title of bigger assets of real property just like that.
Do you need a lawyer to get through this?
You know, I think that since it's such a stressful and daunting project, I hope knowing where to begin as a legal matter will be a comfort, but the maze of financial and legal issues, seeking help from a lawyer may be the best decision to alleviate stress and the burden. We're trained to help. I'm training the very students that we hope will help in the service profession. They're ready and willing to help at this specific time when you're battling grief and then all of this financial legal paperwork of paying taxes, debts, claims, and transferring property. So I do recommend for people to obtain legal counsel to work through this, because as we know, dealing with grief, grieving a loved one, is more than any of us can do on our own. A lawyer can help solve and ease the burden of administering the estate when they pass.
Natalie, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you for having me, Charity.
Natalie Linner is a professor of law at Drake University. Let's talk a little bit more about grief, because, of course, that is the biggest part of dealing with the loss of a loved one. Diane Ascheid is a counselor and licensed mental health therapist based in West Des Moines. She works with people who are grieving. Diane, hello.
Good morning. Thanks for having me this morning.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And of course, this is something that all of us will experience in our lives. Many of us, I guess if we're fortunate to love many people, will experience it many, many times in our lives. When you lose a loved one, there are so many things to deal with and so much grief and so much sadness. What is your advice for someone as they start that journey?
Well, definitely, you know, grief is undeniably difficult. And like you said, grief is a part of all of our lives. I would suggest that, and like Kimmy talked, to have that support system, you know, have people that you can talk to that you feel comfortable to be able to express your thoughts, your feelings, what you're going through. Is very important in this time. Most important, don't try to numb those feelings that you're having that are coming up, those feelings of grief and sadness, because we can't just selectively numb some of our feelings and emotions. If we're numbing like our grief, our sadness, we're also numbing our ability to experience joy and happiness. So, I think Kimmy was doing a good job seeking a therapist. That's beneficial. Of course, I'm biased, but it never hurts to seek out a therapist who has a specialty in dealing with grief and loss.
Kimmy mentioned earlier that she and the kids all have therapists. If you lose someone in your family, is it a good idea to make sure that everybody in the family has someone different, their own person to turn to during this time? Or is this something where you find a therapist you love and everybody can go to the same one?
I think that's an individual and a family decision. If they found someone that they feel is beneficial to every person in that family, that's fine to see that same therapist. However, there are some therapists who specialize in working with adolescents. And so maybe if you have a younger child or adolescent, maybe seek out a therapist who works primarily with that age group. But certainly if Kimmy like has really found a therapist that works well with her family, then of course. And not everyone, I will say that not everyone needs to seek out the services of a therapist. Research does show that many people are very resilient and can process through some of this on their own. But like I said before, I always think it's a good idea to talk to a therapist to help guide you through those feelings as you're going through the grieving process.
As also Kimmy pointed out, so much of the advice that we are given in a time of loss is really hard to deal with during a global pandemic, because it's all about being with other people, turning to other people, spending time with those who understand you and love you. But even during a pandemic, a lot of support groups have gone virtual. And I know that, that's a key piece of advice for a lot of people who have lost a loved one, is to find a support group with other people who understand your loss, because so many people don't really know what you're going through, right?
Exactly. And that's how that person feels, too. Like, no one really understands what I'm going through. It's different for me. So, yeah, to find in a support group, a bereavement group is not for everyone. But I certainly think it'd be beneficial to try to reach out, especially now during this time where you may not feel comfortable going in, you know, to see a therapist. Yeah, your usual coping skills, like going out to dinner with someone, having lunch with someone, that's not available anymore. So to find a group that has experienced similar loss as you have, and there are many out there, go online. All over the United States, you can connect with different support groups, bereavement groups. So if there's one silver lining in this pandemic, it is that you can find a support group or any type of group online at this time, all over the United States.
We have some advice from Twitter saying, if your employer has an employee assistance program, use it, which is a wonderful piece of advice. I think a lot of us do try to get through things on our own. We have this cultural idea that we should be able to get through it on our own. But asking for help is a really, really good place to start, isn't it?
Oh, most definitely. Some people think it's a sign of weakness, especially here in Midwestern Iowa here. Some of us have grown up that way in the rural areas that, you know, it's a sign of weakness to ask for help, but it really is not. It's a sign of strength to ask for that assistance, to reach out and get the support that you need. We all can benefit from having those people in our lives and a therapist, and just to help us process through what we're going through at this time, helping us like work through their sadness, dealing with different emotions like the guilt, learning different coping mechanisms that can help them move forward with their lives.
What do we need to understand about grief? Because grief is not just sadness. Kimmy mentioned some of the surprising feelings that she has felt and that her kids have felt during this grieving period.
Yes, and I will say there is nothing predictable about grief. And there's no really way to tell someone, like, this is what will happen, or this is how you'll respond. This is what it'll be like in 2 or 3 weeks. Even for those who have been through grief in the past, each grief is different and it's unique to that person. There's not a script for grief. And I think that's another thing Kimmy said. You may have ups and downs. One day you may feel like you've kind of in acceptance. The next day, you may feel like you're back in denial or anger, and it may even change from hour to hour. Grief is very unpredictable.
We were talking earlier about PTSD, which is something that a lot of people deal with in the wake of a loss. What are some signs that you may experience that may tell you, yes, I do need to get more help than what I've gotten so far?
I think, well, some of the signs may be that you just feel like you're stuck, like you just can't move on with your life. Or it can be the opposite. Maybe you've moved on a little too well and kind of avoided dealing with that grief. If the grief interferes with your work life, your home life, your school life, or you start having symptoms of depression, those are all reasons that I would feel like people may want to seek out help from a therapist, one who's trained in helping someone work through their feelings and emotions of grief.
And there's a difference between sadness and depression, although they have a lot in common. So what are the signs that tell you this is more serious? Maybe I can't get through this on my own.
And it's going to be a little bit more difficult during this time because, you know, a lot of the sadness may feel like some symptoms of depression. But some common ones would be not feeling like getting out of bed for days on end, wanting to sleep all day, or having difficulty sleeping at all, loss of appetite, or eating too much. I'm trying to think of some more symptoms of depression. Just losing interest. And it's going to be a little hard right now because, of course, some of the things that gave you joy before are probably not going to be the same now, but just losing interest in life in general and losing interest in things that you normally would have enjoyed. So those are some of the things to look out for when you're wondering if you're feeling, you know, having symptoms of depression.
If you feel like you're experiencing PTSD, there are some really effective treatments. It's not something that can always be cured, but it is something that we have developed a number of effective treatments for, at least to help people live with it and lessen the effects. What should we know about what kind of help is available if we're dealing with PTSD?
There's a great website to go on. It's psychologytoday.com, and you can put in your area that you're looking for a therapist, and then like you're dealing with grief. Some of the types of therapy that grief therapists may use is cognitive behavioral therapy, which allows that person to discuss their feelings and emotions by using both cognitive and behavioral techniques to help them cope more effectively. Another really good treatment for PTSD is EMDR. It stands for eye movement desensitization reprocessing. A little bit about EMDR. I mean, I could talk an hour about it, but through EMDR, it changes the maladaptive neural networks by connecting the traumatic memory with new, more adaptive information. So like Kimi was talking about the trauma when she found her husband. So that's trauma that's stored in the brain. So that distressing thoughts and emotions are blended with new positive thoughts and emotions. And it brings the awareness and allows that frozen sensation in the body to resolve through healing movements and its bilateral stimulation. So she talks about one of her children experiencing triggers. And so that trauma is stored in the brain. And so we can be triggered by different things in our environment, like sounds, taste, touch, something we see.
So there are treatments that really can help. And it's good to ask for help
Yes.
if you need it. Diane Aeschide, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Diane Aeschide is a counselor and licensed mental health therapist based in West Des Moines. This hour, we've been talking about what it's like to lose a loved one and the many different things you need to navigate in the wake of that loss. And again, my heart goes out to all of those who are walking through this journey right now. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.